Session number 10420, Rule 52.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 52. Where exactly was the 8th Battalion bridgehead, Colonel?
In a tiny little bridgehead in the vineyard around the derelict farm. And as I say, the brigadier was, I think, very annoyed and convinced he never really liked me after that. But as I've also said, I knew a thing or two by then. I'd a fairly experienced CO, and so was Andrew too. Anyhow, he's walked off in a huff, was it almost, and went across the bridge and to see how the 8th Battalion were getting on. Well, he couldn't get back. And I waited and waited for an hour, and in the end, I went back to brigade headquarters, and there was the general himself, and I told him what had happened, and the general then said there would be no daylight attack, and that, he subsequently ordered that my battalion and the remnants of the 9th Battalion would attack that night after dark.
Who was the general at this time?
Kirkman. General Kirkman. During the course of the day, I sent George Wood's company, D Company, on a large scale clearing up operation into the rushes at the river mouth. These rushes were, 6 foot high. It was frightfully thick area of rushes. No doubt in the winter, probably it was all very boggy, but it wasn't then. And it was called Massadou. There was a house there in the middle, Massadou de Mr. Bianco. And George Wood's company went searching through all this during the course of the day, and he pulled out 14 Italians and Germans hidden all amongst the rushes. It was thought that the Germans might try and do a commando raid behind our lines, and that's really what I sent George Wood for, to see what he could find.
Was there any problems with mines at all?
No. Now, the plan of attack of the 6th Battalion is well known. We had to lead, with the 9th Battalion following, and we had to go down a taped path, white tape, that swung to the left off the road down to the bridge, and then supported by artillery fire and thickened up by machine gun fire of the Cheshire Regiment, we had to get across the river, through the vineyard, and into the sunk alley, and winkle out any Germans that we found. I described the riverbed. The riverbed wasn't muddy bottom. It was a hardish bottom, but you had to go down a steep bank and you had to climb up quite a bank on the far side. Not difficult, but it was a scramble. Now, in the afternoon, prior to our attack, the 8th Battalion were counterattacked by the Germans, and I went up to the gunner OP, and I could see all the Germans coming down the road from Catania, and could see the counterattack, and of course the gunners just started to shell them, and the counterattack petered out. I issued my orders at 7 p.m. that night, and the London Scottish were to come into our area and take over our position. And they they arrived under the command of Jock Wilson, their CO, after dark, and we set off at 11 o'clock that night.
How did you organize your attack?
The companies were to do just much the same as they'd done at Solarino. Reggie Atkinson's company had to get across the river on the right. Then I think it was Spike Galloway's company had to come next, and we had one in reserve, and George Woods had to go right to the end of the vineyard and face upwards upstream left and deal with any opposition that might be firing down the river.
How wide was your frontage?
Well, it was two companies, quite simple, two companies front. There was no distance at all. It was quite a small vineyard, I suppose, 300 or 400 yards or more, perhaps. But it was no size at all. And once you got onto the bank on the far side, the Germans were just there, almost firing down their rows of grapes. Our approach, it was moonlight, and our approach was unheard by the enemy. They couldn't hear us approaching, and nor could they see us in the moonlight, because we were coming down in ditches and behind banks. But when we got to the waterside, really it was horrible, really horrible. I've never had seen some dead, burnt figures lying there, corpses lying there. And I remember, too, stepping over a pair of legs. There was no body, just a pair of legs. I stepped over. And everybody went into the river. And now, of course, all hell was let loose. Of course, the gunners were firing and the machine guns were firing, thickening it up. And as I say, the water was up to my waist, and I lifted up my revolver and field glasses so they wouldn't get wet. And on the other side, there was a terrific amount of Spandau fire opened up. Now, Reggie Atkinson's company on the right managed to get right through the vineyard with a certain amount of casualties, and he got into the open ground beyond Stink Alley and into what might have been a big shell hole. And there he was. He had Germans in front of him and Germans behind him. So he was absolutely pinned to the ground. George Wood's company got to the far end, the west end of the vineyard, and was able to face upwards. The other company, Mike Galloway's company, barely got to Stink Alley, where they were pinned down in and amongst the vines, and they couldn't move at all. Battalion headquarters moved forward into the vineyard, but untenable, because the Germans were just only a few hundred yards away. And we moved back to the edge of the river. And there the doctor really was kept terribly busy. The Germans were quite ruthless. When daybreak came, there were a lot of wounded lying out in front there, and the doctor wanted to bring them in if we could. And I remember two stretcher bearers. One said, well, they won't shoot me if they see my stretcher bearer with a red cross on, and I'll carry my stretcher high up on my shoulder. And when it was all over, there were two wounded stretcher bearers with a dead corpse on the stretcher. They were absolutely fanatical, the Germans, and of course they were parachutists. So the doctor, Captain Murphy, and his sergeant and Davies were kept hard at it, dressing these people, and the padre was a few yards off burying them, any that were dead, just burying them and holding a little service over them as they were being buried. I've never seen such a sight, and I hope I never see anything like it. You couldn't move. I tried to get to Reggie Atkinson's company, but I mean, I could see where the Germans were, just behind the prickly fence, prickly pears. And I told Teddy Worrell to stay put. At that time, we'd never been told about them. Three tanks appeared. It was getting into the morning now, 10 o'clock or something like that. Three tanks appeared in the vineyard, and they stayed put. Would we move? Nothing would get them to move. I think perhaps they were fearful that they might crush some of the wounded soldiers. But if only they'd moved and gone to the stink alley, they could have winkled out the Germans in 5 minutes. Teddy Worrell went up to one of these tanks, which perhaps he was rather foolish to do, and leave battalion headquarters to try and get some wounded, put on the tank and bring them back. And he was frightfully badly wounded in the hip. And, of course, he eventually lost his leg, and that was the end of him. But I think it was perhaps rather foolish that he did. Well, I eventually got through to the brigadier on the wireless set, and I said to him, for goodness sake, can you get those tanks to move? Just drive about and move. And somehow or other, he did get a message through the tank regiment and then through the tanks themselves, and they started to move. Battle was over. The Germans surrendered. But to show you what sort of enemy it was, those taken by Reggie Atkinson's company lined themselves up in Stink Alley and shouted, "Mein Führer, Mein Führer," and did the Nazi salute and tore open their shirts, ready to be shot. So it gives you a very good idea of what the opposition was.
Can you describe what happens in a battalion headquarters in an action like this? What kind of things decisions you were taking and having to take during the course of the time?
Well, what I perhaps wanted to take, but couldn't because of the opposition, I wanted to be able to go around and see that the companies were all in right positions, and I wanted the enemy rounded up to push on. There's little you can do in a situation like that. I would have liked to have got to the companies, but I couldn't. I mean, I'd have been shot like Teddy Worrell was, just going out to look at a few wounded 15 yards in front of battalion headquarters. We were absolutely pinned to the ground.
Did you have any communication with the companies at all, although you were pinned in one place?
No, none at all.
Radios, anything like that?
No, couldn't.
So it was very much an infantryman's battle?
It was. As soon as it was over, then we started clearing the battlefield and making sure that we were in a good position should the Germans counterattack. But we knew quite well they couldn't, because they'd have to come right away across the Catania Plain. I did walk down, funny enough, I've told you how fanatical they were, but I did walk down Stink Alley after it was all over, of course, and there was a wounded German, and he was, in fact, was an Austrian, and he could speak perfectly English, and he said, "Oh, sir, I wonder why we do this." He was wounded and was waiting to be taken back, but...
What kind of casualty did you have?
Well, I was going to come to success, as it is, well known in the history books, but we had to reorganize as quickly as possible, get into the right positions, And I went all around the companies to see what casualties they'd had. And the men all seemed very cheerful. And Reggie Atkinson he'd lost his permanent staff instructor, who was a regular soldier that came to that company before the war. Some Major Palace, he'd been killed, and there were a lot of officers. And our total casualties were 120 killed, battalion 120 killed, wounded and missing. But the brigade was 500. And the sappers built a memorial to us, the 151 Brigade, at the corner of the vineyard, not far from the farmhouse. And regrettably, later on, they put it, it was all carved to the glorious memory of 151. It was a very, very nice memorial. Regrettably, the Sicilians pulled it down, I think, to use the stone to rebuild the farmhouse. But the War Graves Commission rebuilt it, and to this day it stands to our memory. And is maintained by the War Graves Commission, and if anything wanted doing to it, we, out of our regimental funds, contribute to its upkeep, to the glorious memory of our 151 Brigade.
What are the sounds of battle?
Signs?
The sounds. Can you give a picture of the...
Well, I think I said the Battle of Alamein. Guns, heavy artillery, seemed to be rather like a cracking whip. And, of course, the noise of machine guns is, well, fearful if you're close to them, because it was not only were our guns firing, but the Germans were also using Spandos to fire back at us.
What about the men? What noises are coming from the men? Or can you hear them above this racket that's going on?
No, you can't. No, not really. There's such a din, especially if the tanks firing at the same time. There's such a din. You can't hear yourself speak hardly. But it was a very grim battle, and it was one of the worst we'd ever fought. But when you know that my battalion lost 120 killed, wounded, and missing, and the brigade lost 500, it was a severe battle. Later in the afternoon, I was desperately tired. It was the one day in all my military career out there I was unable to shave in the morning. And I know that in about midday I was lying in the vineyard by my battalion headquarters with its lorry, and I had the adjutant was there and all that sort of thing. I lay on the black ground. The ground was very black because it's lava dust. And I was just lying absolutely. I think I went to sleep, I'm not sure. And the brigadier came round with his brigade major, Claude Lincoln. And he told me, I was just going to get up. He said, no, lie still, lie still. Stay where you are. Well, the next day was a pretty mournful day. We buried our dead. And we returned across the river, wading. We had to wade across because the bridge was still under long-distance artillery fire. And I think they had some guns on the lower slopes of Mount Etna. And it was unsafe to walk across the bridge. And I found a place which was much, much shallower, a few hundred yards higher up the river. And by 11 o'clock that night, we were concentrated in a rest area by the sea, not far from where we cleared out the Germans out of the marshes. It was not far from there. But anyhow, we rested amongst thick undergrowth and scrub by the sea. And we got our first meletas there, I remember, since we arrived in the island. And we could have bathe. We could bathe in the sea. Anyhow, we got washed and cleaned up, and chaps washed their clothes, and we rested there for 48 hours, I think. But it was you couldn't get any real rest because the artillery were firing over your head, harassing fire at the Germans. The Germans didn't go very far back. After we'd finished with them at Primacelli Bridge, they didn't go streaming back to Catania. They went into some of the drainage ditches in the plain.
Did you have any men put up for medals for this action at all?
Medals? Yes, I put some in. Yes, I put some chaps in.
Do you recall any?
Well?
Do you recall any of them?
I don't offhand, no. Of course, I didn't put him in, but Lidwell got a DSO of the 8th Battalion. But needless to say, I didn't get anything, and needless to say, Andrew Clark didn't get anything. Andrew Clark had already got a DSO at Marath, but he got nothing here, neither did I. We were then, while we were resting, the 7th Greenhards were very close to the enemy in the Fosso Botticetto, which was a big drainage ditch running across our front at the edge of the plain, Catania Plain. It was beyond the Primacelli Bridge, but it wasn't all that far. It was a very big drainage. It was a high bank, and the 7th Greenhards were there, and we left the rest area on the 21st of July at 10 p.m. at night to get in to relieve the Greenhards. And the relief wasn't completed till 2, because we had to do it so quietly and so slowly. In fact, company, I believe, had to do it man by man. And certainly when we came out, we had to do one company man by man. The enemy were only about 300 yards away in another ditch.
That means that one of their men comes out as one of yours goes in.
We started at 10 and didn't finish till 2. So you can imagine how slowly it had to be. We couldn't take any vehicles in or anything like that. It was just no mortars or no guns because we couldn't get across yet safely get across the bridge. And all the next day it was terribly hot. We were mortared by the Germans. I think quite a lot of guns. I'm not sure, about 80 bombs didn't come over. And the second day we were in, battalion headquarters was a very deep ditch, where movement was just possible. And we were mortared. I had one man, battalion headquarters, killed, I remember. But we realized that that something must be happening, because there were huge explosions on the aerodrome in front of us, behind the Germans, behind the German lines. And it was obviously they were blowing up ammunition in the aerodrome. Now, the reserve company was behind where we were, behind the ditch, and they could creep away and have a bathe in the river where we'd already had such a severe battle. But they crept away one at a time and had a bathe in the river. So you can see we weren't all that far from where we'd fought for the bridgehead. Again, we spent another day there, and it was extremely hot. There was no shade, just lying in the ditches. And again, Primacelli Bridge was shelled, the brigadier, I think he did come in to see us. The brigadier thought that the Germans were pulling out, but the birds were very much alive. The next day morning, they tapped by firing a burst of fire into the line, to the enemy positions, and to see if they would retaliate, which they did. And so much so that Mark Glass, who was commanding C Company then, was seriously wounded out there. We couldn't get him. He had to lie out there all through the day, and we got him. And he was such a nice fellow. He always had a grin on his face, and he managed to stick it out the whole day, being wounded. And we got him in safely. But I never know what happened to him in the end. But he was seemed to be quite cheerful when we brought him in. He had a nasty wound. And then on the 27th of July, we'd been in about 5 days. We had a very difficult task in being relieved. And again, we had to come out in dribs and drabs after dark, and we didn't get out till about 4:15 in the following morning. My good MT sergeant came to fetch me in a jeep. After we'd come right up, but I could march so far, and he put me in a jeep, if I remember rightly, and quickly over the bridge. I remember him saying to me, "Well, sir, they will give you an award this time." You see, the chaps thought it was a bit odd that I got nothing, and never did. However, we went back again to our reserve area behind Primosoli, much the same area where we'd been before, and visited the mass house. And it was a bit, I think it had been a bishop's palace one, but very nice standing in amongst all the rushes. And I know I'd just moved away. I went with somebody, and I can't remember who. Then the Germans shelled it and knocked a bit more of the little tower it had, knocked a bit more of that. But there was there, and I went to see it too. A little lake, and I missed it. Were on it. There were coot and ring plover, and there was a jacksnipe, and there were some ridge shanks. So this is rather a pleasant place, after all. Anyhow, the 2nd of August, we were back again in the ditches, in close proximity to the enemy. Ditches this time, not far.